702. Weekend Breakfast with Rifinwem Paganyan. Live, online, smartphones, DSTV channel 856, 92.7 and 106 FM.
6:37 on the Sunday edition of Weekend Breakfast. Good morning. Welcome to it. If you've just tuned in, you're right on time to join our conversation with Tim Neary, as we do every Sunday morning, as we focus on conservation and everything related to that. Good morning, Tim. Trust you well.
Good morning. I am. It is not as chilly quite, I don't think, as yesterday, but I'm pretty sure that if I raise myself off to this bird bath, it's going to be frozen.
Absolutely.
Which it has been for about the last 5 days.
Incredible stuff, right? I actually saw a picture online of, I can't remember the area, but someone's pool had frozen over and they had one of those plastic garden chairs.
Oh,
just chilling.
Goodness, I think that was in Primrose or somewhere.
Yeah.
It was sort of, you know, and I thought to myself, oh, well, maybe a bit of ice skating. And then I did notice there was a crack in the ice, and I thought, no.
Not a good idea at all.
No,
but yeah,
it
really is invigorating. I guess it reminds you, actually, of, you know, the fact that we are quite fallible. We're not at all in control of everything. And to just chill and take it easy and not get too pumped up on our own supply as human beings, right?
Well,
you are subject to the elements.
It definitely does. And you know, I think one of the things that is so clear with us is we forget about our weather. We forget about how things change. And we also forget about the influence that growth of trees, growth of gardens, et cetera, have on an area.
Mm-hmm.
When we moved here 30 years ago, there wasn't a tree in sight. And constantly you had frost all over the place. So you don't get a lot of frost in your garden. But when you go for your morning walk and the park is, 200 or 300 meters from me, the park is a sheet of frost.
Yeah.
You know, so you've still got that coldness. And when we get a cold snap like this, oh boy, do we complain.
Every single time.
We're going to be complaining in September when we get those hot winds and et cetera start coming through. We'll all be howling about what happened to winter.
The joys of the human condition. Well, Tim, this morning you brought us a really delightful conversation that really puts me in mind of where we were last year in the initial stages of lockdown, right? Everybody was finding community, an escape, distraction online. We were checking out videos of animals in zoos, wandering around. I'm speaking about those penguins specifically, but also streaming videos and content or live streaming from game reserves or parks. And that was such a unique moment, right, during this COVID-19 pandemic. But we're almost circling back to that because, as I was saying before, sports, we kind of need a boost, don't we?
We do. You know, and I think the saddest thing of all is that we've got this COVID business to a point where it's almost the new flu. It's not going to disappear in the next year or the next 2 months or 3 months. And we're going to need to think about what can we do to, I guess, lighten the soul in some ways.
Mm.
Because it is heavy, whether we like it or not. We are surrounded by doom and gloom, and you click on here, and then you're waiting for El Presidente to come along on Sunday and either doom us further or gloom us a little bit, or maybe give a little bit of light in the tunnel.
Mm.
But there's not a lot of light in the tunnel. And the beauty is that I think that nature is something that's ignoring this.
Yeah.
Nature hasn't got time for it. Nature just doesn't have time for the frivolous man, so to speak. And I kind of like this idea where we can keep our nature programs going. Think of the Nature Journal. The Nature Journal would have come to an end.
Mm.
But the Nature Journal has kept going, and we've kept the lightness, and we've tried to, yes, we do go into deep things every now and again, but we've tried to give people a little bit of escapism. And I think that's the really nice part about what Graham is doing. And Graham is you know, I met him years ago when I did AfriCam Radio, and he was the AfriCam cameras.
Yeah.
And there is that association between radio and TV or radio and streaming. We can still work in tandem together.
Lovely stuff.
And I think it's great that we can get deeper and deeper into what they're doing and how they've managed to utilize the technology to make us a hell of a lot calmer about life.
And of course, Graham, that you refer to, is Graham Wallington on the line, co-founder and CEO at Wild Earth. Welcome to the program, Graham. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very, very much for being here on this very warm and crisp morning.
An absolute pleasure. Well, let's start at the beginning. Tim's given us a bit of background about how far back you go. Tell us about Wild Earth. What is it all about?
So as Tim mentioned, we first met back in the days of AfriCam, which was just really webcams looking at waterholes and various other things. Back in 1998 is when AfriCam started. And then sort of a very long story, in 2007, I founded Wild Earth with my wife, Emily. And we continued broadcasting like AfriCam. I also founded AfriCam previously, but with Wild Earth, we continue the concept of broadcasting live from Juma Game Reserve in the Sabi Sands, Northern Sabi Sands, next to the Kruger National Park. And we specifically, rather than webcams on waterholes, although we have still had those over the years, our primary sort of mission has been to give people at home all around the world the sensation that they're sitting on the back of a game drive vehicle in an amazing place with an expert, qualified, experienced guide sitting in the front seat driving us around. And we're in search of nature without any specific plan. We don't go out looking for leopards or lions.
Yes.
We're basically doing what the Japanese refer to as something called Shinrin Yoku, which is forest bathing, which means that just spending time in nature without a particular destination. And as the years evolved, this became very popular all over the world. From African days, it was already very popular, but this became more and more popular, particularly in the United States, but not only. I think mostly there because they had such good internet streaming capabilities long before we did over here.
Sure.
But we then expanded. We added more locations. We had have a camp in the Maasai Mara in Kenya. We're not currently broadcasting from there. It's very expensive. But we did that for years and years and years. And then as the pandemic struck at the beginning of 2020, you can imagine, well, I don't know, obviously everybody knows that all the lodges pretty much shut down straight away.
Yeah.
And what happened was we then partnered with And Beyond, as well as Swalu, and also Eco Training at Pride Lands. And we deployed teams to these locations, in addition to Juma, and at that time was in the Maasai Mara. And what basically happens is we have between 4 and 6 or 7 teams out in these different reserves. Each team is a qualified guide driving the vehicle, with a camera operator sitting on the back of the vehicle with a camera in the position that the guest would be. We also have a team that walks, so they're not all on vehicles. We also have walking teams as well. And then what we do is we bring all of these live streams back. They're all high definition live streams back into our control room in Johannesburg, where our team of directors will then choose between the different feeds and in radio contact with the guides. So we'll go from, you know, the elephant in Pinda to the leopard in Juma to, you know, to a pangolin maybe in
Graham, Swalu. You make it sound like a high stakes operation, as though you've got, you know, a newsroom gallery sort of set up where this hassled, harried executive producer has to make on split second decisions about which feed to take. Is it the pangolin? Is it the super rare species of buck?
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. We don't cut it like TV, though. So
sure.
It's not trying to be a TV show. It's really just trying to make people feel that they're in that experience. So there's quite a few people that are involved in doing this. And we do two of these live safaris a day. So we do a 3-hour one in the morning and then a 4-hour in the afternoon.
Lovely.
But what we do is we then deliver that channel as a 24-hour-a-day channel to DSTV here in South Africa. We also deliver it on social media, YouTube and Facebook and Twitch and Periscope.
Sure.
Where the vast majority of our viewers are is on new platforms around the world called FAST, or Free Advertising Supported Streaming Television Platforms.
Interesting.
These are like Samsung Plus or Zumo, Plex. They don't exist here in South Africa much yet, but they're coming quickly and they're growing quickly.
Fascinating stuff.
But around the world, that's where the bulk of our audience is. Mm. And we're really just, as Tim was saying, we're really just about trying to give people an opportunity to be in nature. And it's really that simple. Mm. And I think what happened was when the pandemic hit us and we were all locked away in isolation, we suddenly realized how valuable nature is to us. And we saw an immense surge in our audience.
Yeah.
So globally, we saw a 5-fold increase in our audience. In South Africa, we saw a 15-fold increase in our audience over a 4-day period. The last 2 days of April, 2020, and the first 2 days of April 2020, saw a 15-fold growth in our South African audience. And I think that was driven very much by, actually I know it was,
yeah,
by WhatsApp groups. WhatsApp groups, but specifically for schools, where kind of classrooms, where suddenly all of our children were at home and were not at school, and parents and teachers began to share and say, hey, get your kids to watch Wild Earth, during this pandemic. Mm. And we just saw this massive growth, which then resulted in us launching in South Africa on DSTV in August of 2020.
Tim, go ahead.
Wild Earth Explorer, Graham, I'm just trying to visualize, can I pack my vehicle and disappear out through the border without anybody seeing me and become a Wild Earth Explorer? What is a Wild Earth Explorer?
Okay, Wild Earth Explorer. So what happened was that a kind of little bit of boring behind-the-scenes business stuff, but it will help it make sense, is that for a long time, our business model was about licensing television shows to broadcasters like National Geographic or SABC and many others all over the world. And we would deliver them a fully completed hour-long live wildlife television show from multiple locations, and we get paid for it. But what happened was that in 2019 we lost our big contract with National Geographic, and we were in a desperate situation, and so we turned to our audience, and we did a crowdfunding project where they wanted to keep Wild Earth running with our daily safaris. And we were very, very overwhelmed by the generosity of our audience. And then in 2020, we wanted to convert this crowdfunding into a regular income that could help us to sustain. And so we built the Explorer program. And really what the Explorer program is that viewers can essentially donate but subscribe to a minimum amount of $5.99 per month. They can pay more, and in fact, the vast majority of our explorers do actually pay substantially more than the minimum of $5.99. And this entitles them to various things, behind the scenes, fireside chats with our crew, early access to new projects that we're working on. They get to help us out with various different things. They also can win each month. We give a prize giveaway from one of our partners. So we'll have a 3-night stay at a gala, for example, provided by And Beyond. And if you're an explorer, then you go into the draw to win that prize. And
sure,
every month an explorer wins that prize. But what's going to happen shortly, as soon as next month, is that we're going to stop streaming on social media our full safaris, and people will need to watch on one of the various places, so maybe DSTV here in South Africa, but or on all the various other places that the channel is available, which has advertising, because advertising is now our, just like 702, it's our business model. But if you're an explorer, you'll be able to watch the channel advertising free.
Yeah.
So basically, it's a subscription to watch without advertising.
I mean, it's really fascinating, Graham, that, you know, obviously your fundamental, your core business has in many ways, or at least how you monetize, has had to, you've had to be creative, right? And a lot has changed in a very short period of time. And speaking of that, at the beginning of lockdown, you heard a lot of phrases like, nature's coming back. So yes. When it comes to your team and it comes to the guys on the ground in the parks, you know, what kind of, I guess, comeback, if at all, or changes have they seen, you know, happening over this period, and how many of them have stayed the same or sustained themselves over this period?
So there's quite a lot of in that question. First of all, from a nature perspective, definitely in the early stages of the lockdown, there was such a removal of people, you know, from nature. I mean, there were still people, obviously, so like camp managers and some of the guides, but obviously all the tourists left the bush, and much of the staff as well. So this created a situation where where we were operating, we were the only ones out for the first while. That slowly began to change, but in that early stage, we were literally the only people out there.
Yeah.
In these reserves, and we did notice changes. There were several, but the one that I remember really being quite noticeable was the wild dogs. So wild dogs find it, well, there's so many aspects to this, but what we noticed with the wild dogs was they would find us. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because what we think, we'll never know for sure, but what was happening was that because there were no vehicles out other than us, the wild dogs were confused and came to the one vehicle that was out to see what was going on. And so our wild dog sightings went through the roof. I mean, it was 1 week where we saw wild dogs like every day.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that never happened. So that was definitely one. There was also other behavioral changes. The elephants in the Sabi Sands area, you know, there's a lot of vehicles, and I think it's quite a disturbance for the animals. We don't realize it because we don't see all the other vehicles, but for them, you know, they've got lots of game drive vehicles coming past them all the time, and I definitely think that the elephants were more relaxed.
Yeah.
I think that less people, you know, not surprisingly, made the animals more relaxed. In terms of the second part of your question, how the lodges are doing, I mean, this is obviously not my, you know, my real area of expertise, but mm-hmm. what I can say is that that obviously the lodges that were very reliant on very, very high-end international travel, you know, kind of $2,000 a night, or,
yeah.
you know, very expensive lodges, you know, they've obviously completely lost all their revenue, and that has the obvious impacts that it has. It means that, you know, people aren't getting employed. You know, they've had to let a lot of people go or go on to half salaries or so on. And the other problem that they have is that while many lodges have been able to attract South Africans to come in and you know, as we've opened up that aspect of travel, the thing with that is that South Africans, you know, expect a significant discount, and although having South Africans come to the lodges for many has been a savior,
sure.
For the very high end lodges, it's very difficult for them to restructure their cost base to make it viable
for locals
for the local market, and so I think that, you know, for some of those lodges, it's been 2 years now, you know, a year and a half of no revenue. So I think that's been very, very, very challenging. And what worries me, and not just me, but everybody in this industry, is not so much, well, I mean, obviously we all worry about the businesses and the jobs. That's crucial. But it means that they can't really fulfill their conservation mandates. And I think that the worries around not, anti-poaching patrols that aren't funded, fencing, the various different infrastructural things that need to happen and be maintained. You know, there's been a lot of a compromise around all of that. And that's worrying. We can't carry on, you know, indefinitely. Yeah.
We'll definitely have to have that conversation at a later time, Graham, but you've pointed out something really, really key. All the best on the way forward. It sounds like you definitely have found your footing in this instance, in this situation, as Wild Earth. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having us on. It's a privilege.
Always a pleasure. That's Graham Wallington, co-founder and CEO at Wild Earth. Tim, thanks for bringing us this conversation. And to Graham's final point, right? The conservation mandate of these lodges, these businesses being impacted by lack of income is something so key and important.
You know, I think one doesn't realize that. As you know, I work on the Wolbergia project, the pepper bark tree. And we have a very large, very high-end lodge up in KwaZulu-Natal, which we have actually raised funds for to assist them to carry on their pepper bark project, which used to be funded by the tourists that came to the lodge.
Yeah.
So that gives you some idea. And that has an impact on the local community. It has an impact on the growing of the trees. It has a far-reaching impact. And I think people don't quite realize what goes on, the behind-the-scenes funding that often takes place for conservation, which has unfortunately dried up completely.
Yeah, we're going to have to, if you perhaps, I don't want to hold you to it on air, but perhaps we can go in-depth and deeper into that conversation at a later date and just collect the relevant stakeholders. It's so important to have. Tim, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And you keep warm, you keep toasty until we chat next Sunday.
And I'm going to leave you with one word to research. Biomimicry.
Biomimicry. Lovely stuff. Tim Neary is a CSI Nature conservationist. And of course, we have these conversations every Sunday.